Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
And good Friday morning to you. It's Brenda Alacy here in for Sandy Beach and in for Joe Beamer, I guess you might say, as Joe is usually here on Fridays. He's on a little mini vacation. Hope Joe has a good time. And I hope Sandy is enjoying the sunshine today. It's cold, but the weather is decent, and I can't complain about the winter this year. But it is a good day to drink coffee, for sure. So people are really passionate about this subject, Tony. I mean, we've had a lot of talk about it and a lot of texts coming in about coffee. In fact, somebody just texted into the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board, "My father always said, quote, I don't trust anyone that doesn't drink coffee in the morning." So coffee does seem to generate a lot of buzz, if you'll pardon the expression. In just about 5 minutes, we'll get with Michael Caputo. Michael was in Washington yesterday for the Roger Stone sentencing. And as you probably know, he's been a longtime friend of Donald Trump's confidant, Roger Stone, and we'll talk to Michael about what it was like in the courtroom when everything happened. Thanks, too, by the way, to Tony Caligiuri, of course, and John Simon, who was handling the phone screening today. And talk about feeling old. I worked with John's father, Howard Simon, back in the day at the Empire Sports Network, and that's, Tony, when I used to drink mugs and mugs of coffee working in TV, and Howard was a pleasure to work with, and as is his son, John, who's following his footsteps in this crazy business of ours.
I was Howard's first producer on WBEN when he came over to do one-on-one sports. I forgot what radio station he came from, but he was just getting going. I was his very first producer.
And you were my first producer.
Yep.
I was going to ask you, Tony, if you remember that. Back in the day, I did a show
called... Ask the Vet.
Yes, Ask the Vet.
No, I don't remember.
You don't remember. Yeah, it's too bad you don't have a good memory. And yeah, Tony Caligiuri, one and the same, was my producer back then. It was an hour-long show, and I would interview different veterinarians on a Saturday morning, and people would phone in with their questions about their beloved pets. And Tony was the guy who was guiding me along, and here we are all these many years later. So lots of fun on the radio this morning before we get into some heavy topics. Also, in the 11 o'clock hour, it'll be great to welcome Buffalo Mayor Byron Brown, who seems to be on a bit of a high these days with all the good things that are happening, according to him, in the city of Buffalo. If you have any questions for the mayor, let me know either by phone or by text at 803-0930, and we'll ask the mayor. Well, we've got him on the phone for about 10, 15 minutes at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. And then in studio will be Tim Clark, and that's a name you may recognize because Tim is heading up the Buffalo Niagara Film Commission, and Tim is hosting a symposium, as it's being called. Really a big deal that should have a tremendous economic impact on this region. We'll get into that. And rumor has it Tim is bringing in a Hollywood producer-director with him when he comes in studio to talk with us at 11. So if you have questions for Tim and the movies and what it's like to be in that business, also about some rumors about big-name stars coming to Buffalo in the next few weeks, let me know. We'll talk about that. In the meantime, we'll go back to the phones before we take our break at 10:15. After that, we'll welcome Michael Caputo. But I wanted to get a few more calls in about the whole coffee scene here in Western New York. And John on Grand Island is with us. John, welcome. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Good, thank you. I was calling in a couple of things. I want to first say a comment that Tony had made about donuts, saying you need something more than three bites.
Right.
I was going to say he needs to try one of Paula's donuts.
Now there's a donut.
They are so big. Some of the people cut them in half and have half of one time and half another time.
Right. Yeah, they're as big as my foot, for goodness sake.
That's how a donut should be.
And they're just as good, too.
John, what's your favorite with your coffee? Do you do a peanut stick?
They have a filled peanut stick, which I love.
Oh, that's cruel. As if the peanut stick isn't good enough, right? You got to fill it with what, cream or custard?
Right.
And tell me about your coffee habits. How do you take it and how often do you drink it?
I'm off and on with coffee. I have, excuse me. I have, sometimes I'll be drinking coffee and then sometimes I switch over to tea.
Mm-hmm.
I like a combination of them. usually coffee in the morning and then tea in the evening.
You know, that's kind of the routine I've gotten into. I try to drink a green tea in the evening just to kind of relax, and after dinner, try to wind down a little bit. But I do miss having a cup of coffee after dinner. I still kind of crave that. There's nothing like a good cup of black coffee, in my opinion.
Well, I got into the habit of the lemon tea with honey.
Oh, yeah. That's very soothing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's a nice way to wind down as well. So, John, appreciate the call. Thank you so much for bringing up really what's become, I think, a Buffalo institution with Paula's Donuts. To me, Paula's is sort of moving up the ranks when it comes to Buffalo foods that we're known for. Obviously, wings, pizza, beef on weck, but I think Paula's is becoming very iconic in its own way.
And they have a new one going up down on Larkin Square. New opening going to be.
You know, that to me, that's very exciting news because it reflects how well that area is doing in the city. I mean, who would have ever thought that that whole Larkinville area would take off? And to have a place like Paula's in there just kind of reinforces, I think, the viability of that region.
Yes, I think so.
Great.
Here's a question for you. Whatever, what happened to Mr. Donut? I remember Mr.
Donut
being around
question,
when I was, I think, a teenager around that time. And we used to walk around the neighborhood, and there was one, I think across from Super Duper, the Great Arrow Plaza. And I don't remember whatever happened to it.
Is it where Jet Pizza is now?
You know, I'm not
on
sure
Delaware?
What's there right now. I haven't been in that area in
a long time.
Oh,
yeah. I'm around that area quite a bit. But, yeah, that's a very good question, Tony. And do you remember Dickie's Donuts on Elmwood and Hurdle?
Yes, that was another one of my father's favorite hangouts. There was one on Elmwood and Hurdle, which, from what I understand, there's going to be the new Sonic location going in there.
There's a lot of fast food places that have gone down that whole corridor on Elmwood and Hurdle and that whole area. You've got Popeyes. Of course, McDonald's is there on Elmwood.
McDonald's started up while we were still in the Channel 4 building.
Right.
And, you know, Home Depot and all that. And, you know, obviously then we moved out. Then Popeyes came in.
Yes, yeah. Checkers, of course. A lot of good food in this town. Well, we're going to talk about a little more food for thought. In this case, it's politics with Michael Caputo, who is fresh off a plane from Washington, D.C. We'll take a quick break and come back with Michael after this. And the WBEN 7 First Alert forecast, today AM flurries south of Buffalo. And I think, you know, I'd be curious to know if there's any problems south of the city. Let me know on the text board, or if you can phone in at 803-0930, they would be great. Partly to mostly sunny and breezy today, high near 30. Tonight, partly cloudy, breezy, low in the 20s. And Saturday, partly cloudy and windy. Look for a high of 35. Brenda Alacy here in till noon with Tony Caligiuri, John Simon on the phone screening. Appreciate the help from these fine gentlemen. And speaking of gentlemen, let's go next to Michael Caputo. Michael is kind enough to join us, just getting off a flight from D.C. Michael, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing, Brenda?
I'm doing great. And we had some fun in the first hour talking about coffee. and now we're getting into some more serious matters, talking about the Roger Stone sentencing. And from what I understand, Michael, you were in the courtroom yesterday showing support for your longtime friend. Is that right?
Right. We several of us came, about a dozen or so people who are friends of Roger's, and the courtroom was filled with people from the Department of Justice. The sentencing of Roger Stone was the last gasp of the Russia investigations. And so those who were deeply invested in that hoax were there to see it all come to an end. Roger got 40 months. That's a far cry less than the 7 to 9 that had been recommended by the Russia investigation prosecutors, who were forced to resign after that. But I think after what happened yesterday, there was a preamble read by the judge that was basically a highly political statement, where she said that Roger Stone was convicted of covering up for Donald Trump. which, of course, is patently false. Donald Trump, his name, there was nothing about Donald Trump in any of these charges. So, you know, I think the president has everything he needs now to pardon Roger Stone, and we hope that happens soon.
Well, and as you mentioned, it was 40 months in federal prison and a $20,000 fine. And I guess that's the big question. Will he be pardoned? But I do want to point out, too, Michael, Judge Amy Berman Jackson, who you were alluding to, said just prior to Stone's sentencing that it was not he was not prosecuted for standing up for the president. He was prosecuted for covering up for the president. And she also said that he will not be sentenced for who his friends are or who his enemies are. So I'm guessing you think that that does not ring true based on what you heard.
No, not at all. And in fact, the trial itself turns out to be quite a joke. We found out that the jury foreman was a lieutenant in the resistance. And she lied her way onto the jury and then charmed her way among all the other jurors into the foreman's chair. Judge Amy Berman Jackson is appointed by Barack Obama. If you had sat through the preamble that I sat through, you would have noticed all the touchstones of basically an application for her to be appointed a court of appeals judge, a promotion for her. She basically was looking to bolster her credentials as a liberal jurist. She did so, and by her statement saying that that Roger Stone was prosecuted because he tried to cover up for the president, patently false, completely a lie, and the president has been tweeting about it.
Hey, Michael, Tony here. You know, the fact that she was tweeting her displeasure, her dislike for President Trump, will that be able to use against her to force a new trial? And will they be able to get it out of D.C., where it seems like Republicans are doomed anytime they go on trial there?
Well, you know, it's D.C. has more, you know, increasingly become a Democratic town, a liberal town. In fact, I think Hillary Clinton won something like 88% of the vote there. A Republican doesn't stand a chance in the jury pool in the district. I think federal trials of a political nature should, from here forward, be transferred out to other courts, other districts, other jurisdictions. I think if they don't do that, no Republican stands a fighting chance. But that this juror, Tony, I watched her during the entire trial. I was there every day but one. And I could tell she was troubled. I knew that she, she admitted that she had run for Congress. I surmised because of where she ran for Congress in Tennessee, that she was a Democrat. And, of course, we find out she wasn't just a Democrat. She's an anti-Trump Democrat and had tweeted about how any supporter of Donald Trump is a racist.
She's an activist.
Yeah, long before Roger Stone ever sat before her. She was calling people like Roger Stone racist. What's interesting, Tony, I mentioned this on Tucker Carlson last night. This jury foreman was out in front of the courthouse yesterday morning early. We arrived very, very early. And some of the people in our group noticed her standing near the front door. Looked like she was contemplating going in, or maybe not, maybe yes. And somebody, she saw us looking at her, and she turned around and ran. This woman, who was a jury foreman, is trying, I think, very hard to become famous. She better get an attorney, because I think she's in some trouble.
You also made a point on Twitter, I believe it was, something to the effect that you believe that this judge is auditioning for a federal court.
I believe so. I mean, he's definitely from the left. We know that. One of the reasons why Barack Obama was slow to appoint federal jurists, because he had political litmus tests for all of them. They had to be activists to even get an appointment from Barack Obama. And we know that Amy Berman Jackson passed that. Amy Berman Jackson hopes that Donald Trump is defeated in November, like most of the resistance does. And I think she's looking for a promotion.
Michael, if you were a betting man, how likely do you think it'll be that Roger Stone does indeed get pardoned? In fact, you were quoted, I think you did a piece with the New York Daily News, and you said there was a lot of optimism about it. How does he feel, and how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, it's still true that Roger is under a court order not to speak to me. It's been going on for 13 months now. Neither of us know why, but we're very studiously avoiding it. And one of the reasons I'm able to speak to the media at all is because I'm not speaking to Roger Stone. Anybody who speaks to Roger and then goes to speak to the media endangers Roger's freedom. There is, and by speaking to him, they're under a media gag order too. I'm not, because Roger's not allowed to speak to me. So I don't know how he feels. But I hear from the media who's covering him, and just from the pictures I'm seeing, that he's quite pleased with the way things are going. I spoke to his wife yesterday in court. We're allowed to speak. And she was just kind of strangely calm about it all. I mean, she's a Buddhist, and she's a very calm person. But I said, you know, anything I can do, tell me. And she says, we're okay. We're okay, I promise you. And to me, I think they feel the momentum toward a pardon. And the president has talked about it even yesterday. I think the president is waiting for this to play out because Roger Stone's attorneys have a request for a new trial under seal they just filed. I presume it's about this resistance Jerry Ford person. And if the judge doesn't give them a new trial, Roger will certainly have good and strong grounds for an appeal based on this Jerry Ford person. And also grounds, because it would be a strong appeal, the judge would be really violating standards if she put him in prison.
Michael, one of our texters brings up a point that you're referencing here about the insane gag order, as they call it. When it might be lifted, will he get a new trial before sentencing? And would the gag order be lifted then? What do you think in that regard?
I don't know. Honestly, I thought when the trial was over, the gag order would be lifted. And then I thought when the sentencing was done, the gag order would be lifted. I think it might be possible that Roger Stone's under a gag order and not talk to me for the rest of his life. Because there's no explanation, and the judge is just being quiet about it. I don't think Roger's going to spend even one day in jail. He may want to put him there, but there are roadblocks to that with the jury foreman making those false statements to become seated on the jury, and the possibility of a pardon. So, you know, if Roger goes to prison, I'd be surprised. I don't want to handicap whether or not the president would grant this pardon, but I haven't heard one person, not one, predict that he's not going to do it.
You mentioned that Stone's wife is a Buddhist, and we all know that Roger Stone is a pretty flamboyant guy, just the way he dresses and carries himself. I remember him coming out at that press gaggle with his arms uplifted, but yesterday, from all reports I read, he was stone-faced, very stoic when the verdict came in. What was your response to that? Were you surprised that he held it together?
I was surprised, but I think Roger was expecting a 9-year sentence from this resistance judge. But there was one day during the trial, right after I think Steve Bannon was interviewed in the court, where Roger was in tears. Yesterday, I saw him. He had a very strong face, and he was having very straightforward conversations quietly with his attorney. And he stood tall in front of the judge when it came time for the reading of his sentence. I think he had a difficult day yesterday, but I think it wasn't as bad as he was expecting, and all signs point to a pardon.
I want to ask you about the letters of support you wrote, as did Carol Palladino, for your friend Roger Stone. We'll get into that after the quick news break, and Michael Caputo will stay with us as well. More after this.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
So we're talking about the whole Roger Stone situation, and yesterday the sentencing took place in Washington, D.C., and Michael Caputo, the political consultant, was in the courtroom in D.C., and as a matter of fact, he just flew back this morning and is kind enough to join us here on the air, and we're looking to reconnect with Michael right now. I think we lost the connection. So if you have questions about what happened with the Roger Stone sentencing, what you think will happen in terms of a pardon, let us know. And there's some really good questions coming in the text board as well. It looks like Michael's back on the line with us. Michael, are you there with me?
Yeah, I was dancing. I'm sorry.
I had a feeling you might be now. You are an avowed deadhead, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Tony and I have a good time.
Tony knew you would love that bump music. By the way, we were talking about avowed things. I'm an avowed coffeeholic. How do you take your coffee, Michael?
You know, I stopped drinking coffee 10 years ago, and there's a new coffee shop opened up in East Aurora called Cornerstone.
Yes, I've heard of it.
Yeah, you know it. I walked by, I went in there, had my first cup of coffee in 10 years, and now I'm a straight espresso, but mostly a cappuccino drinker. I know it sounds fruity, but Cornerstone Coffee brought me back into the coffee family. And I am always on Cornerstone High Test nowadays.
Well, welcome back to the land of Java. The next time I'm down your way, I'm going to make sure I check out Cornerstone. I'd love to support the locals as well. And speaking of support, you were in the courtroom yesterday, and you also wrote letters of support, you and Carol Palladino, who is also a supporter of Roger Stone's. Michael, can you divulge to me what you wrote and why you thought it was important to do so?
Well, it's difficult to write these kinds of letters because you don't know what everybody else is writing and what kind of case they're trying to make with a sheaf of 20 letters. So you basically sit down and just, stick your pen into your vein and just bleed on the paper. When you're as close to Roger, if the person being adjudicated as I am to Roger, it's really a difficult task. I basically told the story of our friendship. How I met Roger, by the way, in Buffalo, and because he in the 80s, he was working for Jack Kemp, flew in from Washington, and it was from there I went to Washington to work for Jack Kemp. Roger and I were, I talked about in a letter how he was my boss for a time, but actually became very close friends, and there's a photo on my wall in my office in East Aurora, and Roger is very funny, and he signed the photo saying, "To Michael Caputo, who learned everything he knows from me." and that is true. Everything I know about, most of the things I know about politics, I learned from Roger, especially about campaigns. And I know Roger differently than the reputation that he's cultivated in the public. He's always cultivated this bad boy, dirty trickster image, and so much so that they did a great documentary about him called Get Me Roger Stone, which is on Netflix if anybody wants to catch that. It's an incredible documentary. I spent some time being interviewed for it. Roger is not a dirty trickster to those of us who know him. He's not a hardball player for those of us who love him. I can't count how many times he's come to my rescue in my life as my first marriage failed, as a company I was working for went bankrupt. Roger and his wife, Nidia, are like my big brother and sister. My big brother I've never had. And Roger introduced me to Carol Palladino, one of the great introductions of my life. And that's how Carl came to write as well. And Carl wrote a very heartfelt letter, too. These letters, they can be, you can talk about
what kind of a person he is or what you think about what might be in some alternative sentencing. But the one thing you don't do, and I don't think many people did, is you don't question the verdict. Even though the verdict to me was questionable, it's the judge's courtroom, and you don't want to insult her when you're trying to inform. So even though I don't agree with the verdict, and I found it to be tainted now, of course, with this jury for a person who comes from the resistance, I begged for mercy, and I don't think he got it.
You know, Michael, we're getting a lot of interesting texts coming in, too, from our listeners, and one of them asks an intriguing question. How can you be charged with a crime from an investigation of a crime that is proved to be illegitimate? Do you think that might help him with the possible pardon?
Well, the judge made a very big to-do about that, as well as the prosecution did, that it's not necessary, according to legal standards, that the lie has to be about a crime. It can just be a false statement to the Congress, which is what he was charged with principally. I, of course, disagree with that. And the laws, what's appropriate for a prosecution is what that kind of refers to. If there was no crime and the discussions were, you know, that the lies that they're accusing are about a crime that doesn't exist, most often prosecutors don't press charges. But because Roger Stone was to the right hand of the President of the United States, they went after him hammer and tongs. Didn't matter if there was a crime. If he had said, if they had asked him the weather, and he said it's raining, and the sun had come out for a brief time, they would have charged Roger Stone with perjury.
30 seconds before the break, Michael, another question on the text board. Speaking of pardons, does Mr. Caputo think Paul Manafort will be pardoned as well?
I don't know. Paul Manafort was charged with real crimes, financial crimes. He spent a significant time in prison as well. I think the president feels compassion for him. I don't think he'll pardon Paul, but he might commute his sentence, might shorten his sentence, because Paul's sentence, the president has complained that just like Rod Blagojevich, who he pardoned last week, the Democrat, the president has complained that the sentence was just too long.
Michael, we'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, I do want to get your thoughts on the Democratic debate. I wonder if Michael Bloomberg is still licking his wounds. And also, your thoughts about Rush Limbaugh winning the Medal of Freedom. Much more to come after this. Michael Caputo on the air, WBEN contributor and political consultant. And Michael, we were talking quite a bit about Roger Stone in the last half hour or so, but I did want to get your comments on how you thought the Democratic debate went the other night, and particularly how poorly it seems Michael Bloomberg did. He looked ill-prepared and looked to me like he had no way to combat any of the people who were coming at him hard on that stage.
And how poorly prepared he was. And in fact, one of the features, I know the Bloomberg team. Anybody who's worked in New York State politics knows Mike Bloomberg's campaigns. I've known people that have worked for him very well. And one of the features of his campaigns is that he pays people twice or three times more than their, you know, peers at other campaigns, and usually twice or three times more than their worth. And one of the first things you see in the follow-up to that debate was a story in the New York Times where one of his senior aides, Brenda, said, "I'm responsible for his mistakes in the debate. I didn't prepare him properly." So you see Mike Bloomberg actually pushing for his blame, his the blame that he should take.
So he threw him under the bus.
Yeah, threw him right under the bus. But when you pay them far more than they're worth, they will genuflect when you tell them to. And these are the features of Michael Bloomberg campaign that you can count on. He's arrogant. Most politicians are, but he's uniquely arrogant. And he didn't prepare enough for the non-disclosure agreements with women he defended with sexual advances or whatever, sexualized work environment. He didn't prepare properly for it because he doesn't think he did anything wrong. And he was going to get absolutely shellacked by people like Elizabeth Warren. You know, people laugh at Elizabeth Warren, but she, when she's prepared, she's an attack dog. And she took him apart. I don't usually watch these Democrat debates, Brenda. I, I try to organize oral surgery.
Might be a little more pleasurable then, huh? I thought it was very entertaining the other night. I mean, my husband and I were watching, and I said, you know, this is nasty. The gloves are off, but you just never knew who would attack next. So it kind of kept you on the edge of your seat. And I was surprised at the level of venom between Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar. There's no love lost there.
There's not. And I actually did watch this debate. I was at my friend's house in Northern Virginia waiting to go the next morning for the trial. And we we were switching back and forth between the debate and an old rerun of Dumb and Dumber, the speech. And sometimes I got confused as to what we were watching. But honestly, Buttigieg is one of the most scripted, perfectly scripted candidates I've ever seen from either party. And I've been a few of these battles. And I'll tell you, Klobuchar got under his skin. He clearly does not like her. She did exactly what she needed to do. She showed a crack in the perfect demeanor of Pete Buttigieg. I find Pete Buttigieg very interesting. I mean, beyond all my disagreements with the politics of those people on that stage, Buttigieg is by far the most interesting character there. And Klobuchar ripped the bark off of him.
And he is so glib, too. I mean, the guy, he's young and doesn't have a whole lot of, big playing field experience, obviously, but he's glib, he's bright, he can bust into Spanish at the drop of a hat. He's a very impressive guy.
You guys see the letter that people of South Bend have sent out. Do not vote for this guy. He's been a disaster.
I did not see that, but I know there was a lot of pushback from his city.
Yeah, and he's got a lot of detractors from Indiana, but I'll tell you, he's also a veteran. He's been in combat areas, although he's never seen combat. You know, I respect his service. He's very bright. It concerns me that his father is an avowed Marxist-Leninist. He was raised in a Marxist-Leninist home. His father was a professor of that ideology and other topics at Notre Dame. That bothers me a bit, but I think it's going to unfold very differently than we know right now. You know, we see Joe Biden hanging on with his fingernails.
Yes.
He's got some delegates, and he's got some money. And I think Joe Biden, I don't think he's getting out of there anytime soon.
Michael, I've got to ask you before our time is up. We have about 4 minutes left. A couple things. One related to Buttigieg. And what did you think of what Rush Limbaugh said about kissing his husband on stage over and over again? And also, what did you make of Rush winning the Presidential Medal of Freedom as given by President Trump?
Well, I'll tell you, but Rush was making a matter-of-fact observation. He didn't pass any judgment on him. He said that the American people are not ready for these makeout sessions in front at every event. And any analysis of data, whether it be polling or focus group data, you'll find that he was speaking the truth. The fact is he's not allowed to speak the truth because he'd be knocking a Democratic candidate for president. I'll tell you, I was a big supporter of him getting the Presidential Medal of Freedom. You know, we ended up with, deep into six figures of legal fees. Our family did because of the Russia hoax. And we were so well represented by Dennis Vacco and Lippis Mathis here in Buffalo. But, you know, it's expensive to get the right kind of a representation, especially the experts like Dennis. And Rush Limbaugh was raising money for me on his show. And in a matter of 2 days, he and Sean Hannity helped me raise the entire bid. Our family will always appreciate Rush Limbaugh. The problem with the Medal of Freedom criticism is that he's a hero to only some Americans, and that's always going to draw some criticism.
Yeah, but Bob De Niro received one, and he's a hero to even less.
Yeah, he is, but I got to tell you, that whole scene in the State of the Union, it just really tore me up. And the fact that the First Lady gave it to him right there on the balcony, What an amazing experience it must have been.
It was pretty dramatic to see all of that unfold, and certainly when the soldier was reunited with his family, there were a lot of heart-tugging moments. You know, say what you will, good or bad, about President Trump, but he certainly knows how to orchestrate these events and get the desired results, no matter what your feelings are on the political side. Before we close, Michael, your thoughts about President Trump endorsing Chris Jacobs?
Well, I'll tell you, we have one Republican candidate in the special election in New York 27, and that's Chris Jacobs, and the president wants that seat to remain Republican. Now, I expected him to endorse Chris Jacobs in the special election. He made it very specific in the endorsement that it's only for the special election.
Yes.
But it does give Chris an advantage, and I wish him well. I think all Republicans hope that he wins, but it's going to be a very competitive primary.
There's no question about it. And somebody just texted in whether Nate McMurray, if he will win and if running Jacobs was a concession of having the governor stack the deck for the April election.
Well, I think the governor was going to stack the deck by declaring the special election on the date of the Democratic presidential primary. By the way, it looks like it's going to be a big one in New York. Not usually we're so late in the game that we don't matter. I think New York's going to matter, and we're going to get a big turnout. And if we get over 50% turnout, Chris Jacobs is in a danger zone. He really is. Governor Cuomo didn't line it up for Nate McMurray, but Nate McMurray now has a fighting chance. I think he has less of a chance than he had when he ran against Chris Collins, who was under indictment. I don't think he'll ever be my congressman, Nate McMurray. But, you know, all bets are off in a special election, especially when the presidential primary is on the same day.
Do you think anybody from the Trump team will come here to campaign on behalf of Jacobs?
It depends on the numbers, and the pollsters over at the National Republican Congressional Committee are the best in the business. If they see that Nate McMurray is creeping up on it, we'll see a member of the Trump family here, I'm sure, maybe Don Jr. And that would be a signal to all of us. If one of the, you know, a White House official or a member of the Trump family or even the president himself come here to campaign, that's a sign that Nate's sneaking up on a Republican seat in Congress.
By the way, I have Beth Parolato coming in this Sunday at 10 a.m. in studio for Hardline, and then Carol Calabrese. So another packed show with, you know, up-to-date political talk. Michael, as always, thank you so much for joining us, especially as you just got off the plane. I really appreciate your time this morning.
My pleasure. Have a great day and a great weekend.
We'll put a wrap on this hour of the show. Coming up, Buffalo Mayor Byron Brown on the phone with us for a few minutes, and then we'll talk in studio about what's happening in the movie scene here in Buffalo with Buffalo Niagara Film Commissioner Tim Clark and Hollywood director Fred Olen Ray, all coming up after the 11 o'clock news.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.